I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. We're brought up to believe that people who are the life and soul of the party are the happy ones, and that if you're a shy person, someone who prefers fewer people, who is not the loudest in the room, you're somehow not leading as good a life as those extroverts, that by being shy, you're essentially broken. My guest today totally disagrees with this, insisting that the best way we can support our shy children is to celebrate their shyness. Having suffered from crippling shyness herself as a child, Nadia Feiner is on a crusade to help shy children. As well as being an author, she runs shyness programs with schools and is an ambassador for Girl Guiding, collaborating with them on a Shy and Mighty badge. She says, "I believe shyness is a diversity issue we don't yet recognise. It's a cognitive difference, yet we don't think of shy people as neurodiverse." Nadia, thank you so much for joining me. And I love this notion that shyness is a difference, that it's a diversity as opposed to something that is kind of negative. Because I was definitely brought up to sort of, you know, really celebrate those people in my kind of, in my circle of friends, my peers, who were the sort of extrovert ones. And the shy ones were definitely regarded as sort of kind of underdogs, as it were.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. And yeah, it's so true. I think it's something that we're conditioned to believe that the louder you are, within reason, the better. And that if you're someone who hangs back, who's a bit more reserved, perhaps you're better on with one-to-one conversations than in massive groups. You're kind of led to believe that you're not good enough, or there's something wrong with you. And I think that starts early, and for me, definitely continue through into adulthood, into the workplace. And it's something that I've had to kind of manage and struggle with through my life. And it's only now that I'm doing this work that I'm starting to see that it's something that society could view differently.
I mean, it's interesting. So we're recording this shortly after sort of Jubilee celebrations. I feel like we've had a sort of week or a weekend, certainly, of kind of lots of parties and mixing with lots of people. And you definitely think it's the children that kind of get right into the throng are the ones that are having the best time. And the children that sort of stay at the periphery, I mean, definitely my son is one of them, are somehow not having such a fun time. But he's always sort of reassuring me that actually he's having a lovely time. It's just not the kind of fun that I like to have, because I'm not as shy as he is.
Yeah, exactly. We project our own preferences onto our kids, and we think, fun equals a very specific version of fun. And if you or your child does not fit into that it doesn't somehow count, or it can't be true. Whereas actually, you know, someone might be perfectly happy reading a book, chatting to a dog, or just one other person, or a couple of other people. That is fun for some people. It's not necessarily the case that everyone wants to be standing in the middle of a big group of people. It's not necessarily fun for everybody. So I think we tend to judge based on this very specific view of success, of fun, of what it is to be a human even. And I think that's where I want to try and change attitudes a little bit, because we know that 57% of people in Britain are shy, consider themselves to be shy. And I would even expect that that number, if we redid the research now, post-pandemic, that it might be higher. And that the incidences of social anxiety, which is a kind of extreme form of shyness, would be much increased versus a few years ago. So this is not something which affects a tiny number of people. It's huge. But the nature of it means that we don't talk about it. It's hard to put your hand up and say, excuse me, but I'm shy and this situation doesn't work for me, because that's what being shy is.
You know, with the experience of being the parent of a shy child, one of the things I always say to my son is, don't be afraid of telling people that you're shy or that you're not enjoying it or that you're finding something, you know, quite overwhelming, because actually admitting that you're vulnerable, even at the beginning of any kind of relationship, it sort of fast tracks that friendship. I think it really makes people respect you. And I think very often a shy person can come off as maybe slightly aloof, maybe slightly unfriendly, maybe sort of unwilling to kind of engage with people. And if we acknowledged at the beginning, I'm sorry, I'm just really shy, you immediately kind of forgive them a huge amount more. I've definitely been in situations with people who I've definitely felt didn't like me or weren't that invested in whatever situation we were in. And I've subsequently found out they're just very, very shy. And if I'd known that at the beginning, I feel that it would have been so much better for our relationship. So one of the things I would say to him is just be honest with how you're feeling. And if you're saying I'm feeling overwhelmed or I'm really shy, people will immediately like you so much more and it will be much easier to connect with people.
100%. And if you think about the numbers, you know, pretty much half of the population have a similar experience. So it's just no one is talking about it. And I think you're completely right that if we do talk about it, and it's what I do, you know, that's I talk about it. I tell people I feel shy or I'm nervous doing this or this is difficult for me, and people understand. And then they connect with you on a deeper level, they support you, because ultimately I think we want people to succeed, we want to help others. So for sure we need to, that's one of the things I really recommend, is that we talk about it, we own it, it's nothing to be ashamed of. I think previously though there was a shame around shyness and it wasn't something that people wanted to own or own up to. Because I think it had a bit of a bad image, you know, something that perhaps seems babyish or that you should have grown out of. And I'm hoping to change that by talking about it more, by sharing my experience and encouraging others to do the same. You know, if I talk about my shyness, then hopefully other people will talk about theirs. And when they talk about theirs, all the other shy people who haven't admitted to it or mentioned it will hopefully talk about it, and there's a kind of cascading effect. I've experienced it myself recently where someone I perceive to be aloof or unfriendly, who I as a shy person worried was judging me because that's part of being shy, I suddenly thought to myself, well, hang on a minute, perhaps they're shy. It's just surprising that they would be, because in other aspects they seem so larger than life. But when I reframed their behaviour and started to see it through the lens of perhaps they're shy, it all suddenly made a lot more sense, and we were able to talk to each other a bit more, and it took away those feelings of judgment. So I think even as someone who's helping shy people, who writes about shyness, who talks about it a lot, I still can fall into that trap of thinking that because someone's not talking to me, they're, you know, not being friendly. So it is an issue, and I think the more that we can talk about it and feel like it's just part of normal human behaviour, it's a preference, it's part of the human condition, you know, it's just the way we are.
Well, and actually, I really like that comparison, you know, with kind of other neurodiverse issues. You know, and I look to our vocabulary. How common is it for us to say to a child, oh, you don't need to be shy. You just need to get over your shyness. Come on, pull yourself together. And it's not like we say, oh, come on, you don't need to be dyslexic. This is just the way people are wired. And yeah. We can't so say, don't be shy, in the way that we say, well, don't be autistic. You can't do that. It's just the way you are.
We totally do. And I was in, it was a very strange experience. I went to a cafe in Newcastle, and they found this cafe completely by random, eventually. And on the back wall, graffiti, shy bairns getting out. I looked it up, and that is a saying, shy kids get nothing. And I just thought, wow, this is so ingrained in our language, in our society, in the way that we talk to our kids and the way we talk to each other. Don't be shy. Shy, you know, being shy is bad. Oh, you're not shy. Come on. Kind of denying the experience. You're so right. You wouldn't say to someone, stop being autistic. It's part of the way people's brains are wired. It's part of who we are. And in the research I've done, I've shown that, sure, we can inherit shyness from a parent, and it could be partly down to something that's happened in our lives. It could be something to do with the home situation or environment we're in. But for many of us, it is part of our makeup, it's part of our kind of physiology. You know, to deny that or tell someone that they need to change it to fit in, I mean, when I think about it, it's really rude and upsetting. And we all need to try a little bit harder, I think, to support people, understand that, you know, it's that kind of shoving someone out onto a stage and telling them, oh, come on, you'll be fine, stop being shy, you're not shy, just get on with it, because somehow we believe that it's okay.
Is it possible, do you think, to grow out of shyness or to you know, become not shy, to teach yourself not to become shy?
Yeah, you can practice overcoming aspects of it. I think this is why it's so complex, because it is kind of part of who we are, but you can overcome the aspects of it which are holding you back, so you can practice. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I was nervous before this. I worry about what people are gonna think, but I've done this a lot of times and I've practiced, so I think I can still do it, but there's, and I actually enjoy it, which is good, but it's more that there are plenty of things that would persuade me not to do it. You know, there's reasons why I wouldn't want to, and it would be easier to let those things dominate. So I think you can push past those things and learn to handle them. I met a guy the other day who owns a bank, and he said, oh, you know, I'm a really shy person, but I've also learned to handle the bits of it that are difficult. So I don't think it goes away, but you can handle it. And I think, you know, the issue is it's ingrained into everything. It's in our education from nursery school, kindergarten, right through. It's secondary school. It's in universities. It's in our professional lives, the way we're recruited for jobs. And I think there's other aspects of society, like the judicial system, the political system, where it's not created by shy people for shy people. It's created by outgoing people to suit more outgoing people. And there is an issue, because if you think about, like, I don't know if you heard in the news, but that very sad story of a girl who was at Bristol University, and she had high levels of social anxiety, and she was studying physics, and her core, like, to become a good physicist, I imagine that suits shy people very well. You know, you're researching, you're working quietly, you're thinking deeply, coming up with ideas and concepts. And then towards the end of her course, she had to present to over 300 people, and that was so difficult for her, such a massive source of anxiety. You know, she ended up sadly committing suicide. And I mean, the idea that a course has been created for a certain type of person when actually those skills are not really part of the subject. Like, why was that part of it? And why was nobody helping her? So, you know, I think it's important that we start looking at shyness that can become social anxiety and see if we can help support people and understand them better from a much younger age.
And I totally get your idea that, you know, if we're shy, we should embrace that. But I also think that sometimes when you're shy, it's easier to say no to sort of social interactions. And I think very often, I think actually social interactions, whether it's with a very few amount of people or as one person or lots of people, are the sort of the real joy of life. It's that finding some person that you really connect with. And the problem with shy people is that very often when there's a sort of suggestion of a social interaction or situation, it's easier to say, oh, no, I'm not going to go. But you thereby miss out on the opportunity of potentially meeting just one person who you really connect with. And so definitely with my children, I'll say, try and, you know, come along and bring a book. And if you know, we can always leave early if it's all sort of too much. But don't just check out of sort of interacting with people because you find it more intimidating than someone who's a bit more extrovert. Is that the right thing to be doing, to encourage them? Not necessarily. I'm not saying come to a sort of festival where you're surrounded by loads of people and you don't get any time on your own. But just don't check out of social situations, because I do think you're then, you know, risking the fact that you miss out on the odd friendship.
I think you're correct there, that it's the problem is shy people miss out. We miss out because we don't put our hands up in class. We miss out because we don't want to go to parties. We miss out because we're overlooked or ignored. And I think the issue becomes when missing out is almost a habit. Like, we're so used to avoiding things that it just becomes part of our lives. And that missing out on relationships and connections and life is not that much fun, and it doesn't lead to happiness. So I would try to change the pattern of behaviour and move away from avoidance and missing out to taking a little risk.
Because I think the problem with shyness is that very often it's this vicious circle. You sort of, you're the quietest in the class, and then you don't want to go to the parties, and then you sort of miss out on forming those friendships. So then you think, well, actually no one likes me, I'm a boring person, or I'm not worthy of friendship, I don't get on with anyone. And it's not that that's the case, it's just that because you're shy, you're missing out on the opportunity to make those connections. So just a little baby step of, you know, maybe chatting to one person and being surprised that actually a lot of people are a lot more like you than you imagine.
Yeah, I think we tend to be drawn to the loud people. We think we have to make friends with the most outgoing people, when actually, if you take a look around, you know, half of the population are shy. So therefore, in a class, you would probably be surprised that actually there's a whole bunch of people who feel similar in lots of situations and who also are a little on the quiet side. So rather than feeling inferior or dominated by louder people, I suggest kind of looking around you and really seeing, you know, who else might be feeling the same, who else is a little bit shy, who else tends to stand on the sidelines. And even just going over to them and saying, oh, hey, I sometimes feel shy in these situations. You know, the chances are they're going to say, oh, yeah, me too. And you've already formed a connection. We have to be careful, though, not to kind of overemphasize or, you know, to kind of force our own version of friendship or socialising onto shy people. So, you know, it's okay not to have a gang or to be in a big group. It's okay to have one or two friends who are really good friends, you know, friends for life. And I get a lot of messages from parents who are worried that their kid is maybe socialising differently to the way they socialise. And I think we need to be more open to different forms of hanging out and of making friends, rather than expecting quieter kids to integrate into kind of louder groups, which is, you know, can be fun, but also it's not necessarily the kind of connection we're craving. And it's easy to end up being kind of dominated in a way that doesn't feel great.
I mean, it's difficult if your family are sort of quite like, you know, lots of people and meeting new people. I personally love meeting new people and being in an environment where there's lots of people that I've never met before. I find it really interesting. And yet, you know, I've got a child who finds that very, very difficult. But as a family, we can't just sort of relinquish what we all enjoy in favour of what he likes. But at the same time, I'm aware of wanting to be the best mother to a shy child. So how do you navigate that?
It would help if we could think of a specific situation and then we can give examples. So perhaps, like, would you be having, like, going round to other people's houses?
Yeah, let's say we're going round to, actually, so this weekend, you know, we're going round to someone's house. There were maybe going to be 20 people there, lots of sort of children of different ages. I knew they'd have fun, but he was like, I don't really want to go. And part of me was thinking, well, I really want you to come and just see if you're going to have fun. But the other part of me was thinking, do you know what, if you're just going to be moping around and saying, I want to go home and sort of ruining the night for everyone, you might as well just stay at home and sort of read your book. But then I'm just aware that you can't just check out of life. And the more he does that, the less opportunity he has to sort of make friends.
On the face of it, so what, you know, it's just a party. Sure, he'll be all right. But for him, and I feel his pain, because for me, that it's difficult. You know, I'm thinking immediately, oh gosh, there's pressure. It's noisy. I like the people going. I'd happily talk to one or two of them at a time, but there's too many people there at once, and it's going to be quite tiring for me, and I won't know everyone, and I start having this kind of dialogue with myself where I'm kind of talking myself out of going. I find personally that going is good because I will overcome those things and I will probably have a good time, but I think having some understanding from people around me whereby I'm not literally being dragged and kind of shoved into a situation that I find really hard, but to others seems kind of average. Like, it's good that you understand that it's difficult. I think having, if he can have something with him, like an activity that he can get on with, whether it's a book, which is a little bit antisocial, or some sort of activity that maybe someone else might look at and go, oh, what's that? That's interesting. Can I join? That's a kind of double whammy because it gives them an opportunity to do something alone but also invite others in. I prefer to be busy at these kinds of parties. I mean, obviously, I'm a grown up, so I end up kind of gravitating towards the kitchen where I'll, you know, find a job to do, and I'll chat to people while I'm maybe making some drinks or washing up or doing something like that to keep busy. So for kids, if there's a way that maybe this is where I always find pets come in very handy. So it's always useful if there's a pet around because, you know, a kid can, hopefully they like pets, they can keep busy kind of looking after the dog as a distraction.
Yeah, I know, that makes absolute sense. Is there stuff as parents that we think might be helping that doesn't really help shy children? Do you ever sort of observe parents trying to help their children but actually kind of making it worse?
Yes, I do. We've touched on the language, so I think there's a big issue around talking about the problem or you need to be fixed or there's something wrong with you. And even parents do say those things. Also, an approach which is too much, too forceful. We discussed kind of tiny steps, didn't we? And the idea that a party that for you guys seems normal, for us seems massively difficult. So a small step for us might be turning up to that party and being there for a few minutes, saying hi before we went into another room. Like, that might be huge.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Whereas for a parent who's not shy or who has a lack of understanding, they might think, oh my gosh, all they did was come in, they only spent 5 minutes and then they disappeared. I think there's often a mismatch between expectations and the idea of what's challenging to a shy person may seem like absolutely nothing to somebody who's not shy. And I think that's why you see this slightly kind of brutal approach, which can happen particularly in schools where shy kids are kind of forced to do things, maybe public speaking or being in plays or performances, for example, which is too much too soon.
And it's difficult, like, because some children really thrive on that, and they sort of suddenly, that's their kind of light bulb moment. Actually, I don't need to be shy, because actually, you know, I stand on stage and people clapped and people laughed and people, you know, and I feel sort of on top of the world. So it's difficult, because some children will really thrive with that challenge, but I can imagine a lot of people would break under that challenge.
Yeah, and it's hard to know. You have to know the child really, really well and have a really good understanding before you push it that far. And so my preference would be to build up to it. It's far less risky for the child to build up to taking big steps like that rather than throwing them in at the deep end. So best, personally, I think, to build up to it gradually. The other thing I would say is we're not used to asking shy people what they need. In fact, most people have never been asked, what do you need to make this better? How can I support you? What can we do as a family? What could we do as a class to support you?
And as when you were a child, a shy child, if someone had asked you that question, would you have had the answer?
I was in a very, I'm in my 40s now. And at that time, we did not discuss this kind of thing. When I first withdrew, it was more in my teens that it impacted me. And I did not tell a soul. I didn't even really admit it to myself what was going on, and it wasn't in the environment I was in. We just didn't talk about mental health, we didn't talk about preferences, we didn't discuss our feelings really. We just led our lives and things were tricky, and that was kind of the way it was. And I think if someone had asked me, I think I would have been very relieved to talk about it and try to maybe explain how I felt, and that I had all these feelings of shame and embarrassment and self-consciousness, and I didn't really know what to do with them or how to handle it. And instead, I just kept it inside of me for years and years. and I kind of had to learn to live with it as an adult as well. And it wasn't until fairly recently, like about 3 or 4 years ago, that I realised, oh, I'm shy, and that is why I don't like doing these things. There's not something wrong with me, and I'm not lazy or
irrelevant or
and I have stuff to say and it's important. It's just that certain things are difficult for me and I can choose. Do I shape my life and avoid doing them? Or do I just build up to practicing those things? So it's a choice. But since I started to talk about it and help other people to do the same, it's become, you know, suddenly it's almost like all the pieces are slotting in and it's starting to, things make sense that previously didn't. And, you know, I get messages and emails from people who are in their 60s and they've never spoken about being shy, ever. And I just hope that through this work I can change that and help much younger people to have a better experience of being shy and not feel those negative feelings about something which arguably is a preference.
You know, essentially what you've done is you've been really brave. You've sort of pushed yourself to do things that are, you know, way outside your comfort zone, which I think for all of us is a really beneficial thing, whether you're a really outgoing person or a very shy person. It's what that thing, you know, how brave that thing is for you, which is the sort of unique thing. So I remember for years, whenever I went on live TV, I would be suddenly terrified. I'd literally, my voice would go all sort of shaky. But I kind of kept doing it because I realized that every time I did it, it got better and better and better and better. And it was like working a muscle, that it just became a lot easier. And listen, for many people, that's never, never, never going to happen. They'd never be able to do that. But that might be, you know, going to the shop and talking to the shopkeeper, or, you know, talking to one person at a party, or going to a party where you don't know that many people. Whatever it is about finding that thing which to do is being really brave for you, but not being intimidated by them, but trying, you know, accepting that challenge, which I do think, you know, because you feel so proud of yourself, don't you, when you've done something that you were worried about doing and you've realized it wasn't as bad. And that in itself will increase your confidence very slowly, but in a sort of, hopefully in a sort of measured way.
You know, back in the day, I found making phone calls excruciating. I didn't phone people that I didn't know, ever. And so I had to practice. And so now when I look back on it, I do sometimes revert and find that difficult and think, oh, God, I've got to ring that person. Oh, I don't want to, but I'm able to do it because I practiced. And once I'd got good at doing that, you know, the next step is being able to leave a voicemail, which I am not a big fan of voicemail. I still don't like doing it or want to do it for so many reasons, but I can. And if I don't, if I wimp out of doing it enough times, then it becomes really difficult again. So I have to keep practicing that. And then from there, you can move on to doing bigger things and bigger things. So I have been on television, you know, I have been on live, which was terrifying, ITV News talking about this. And I would not have been able to do that had I not built the bravery muscles that I have over the years. You know, it doesn't just suddenly happen. And I think sometimes we expect stuff to come so easily, like so quickly and as if by magic, whereas I like to help people make a plan. You know, if you think consciously about the things you'd like to be able to do, and then figure out the steps that you need to take and commit to those steps and actually take them, then you will be able to move forward and achieve your goal, and then you set another goal. I think it's just that being shy, no one had ever considered using that approach before. It was just not given enough focus or conscious attention. So people never thought to do that or to kind of actually write down I want to be able to put my hand up in class, so I'm going to practice and these are the things I'm going to do. And once I've got good at putting my hand up in class, then I'm going to build up to maybe being able to stand at the front and share my work.
It's essentially redefining what bravery is. Because, you know, bravery is not all base jumping and skydiving and going to war. For some people it is, as you say, putting their hand up in class and saying one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about telling children that brave is not all. I mean, we went to see Top Gun yesterday and it's not all Tom Cruise flying around fighter jets. It's often something that is much more every day. But brave is so individual. What being brave is such a unique thing that depends on that person.
And I think for shy people, it comes down to having a voice and that your voice matters. And when we feel like we're not heard or listened to when we speak, or when we feel like somehow what we have to say is not important, it's easy to speak less and to not push yourself to have a voice. But the point is that if society only has louder voices, outgoing people speaking up in class, at work, in friendship groups, on television, you know, if those are the only voices that we hear, it has an impact on everything because we're missing half the population. We're only hearing from a certain type of person, and I think that's why diversity comes into it, why this is a diversity and an inclusion issue as well, because we need a range of voices in everything that we do, and quieter voices are important, and there's reasons why. It's not just kind of, oh yeah, let's be nice and let the quiet people have a turn. The point is that when you're not the most outgoing person, and when you're not always talking, you're listening and observing and thinking and creating. And when you're listening, you're able to connect with other people and have empathy and be sensitive to the needs of others. So we need those people to be able to speak up in society, because otherwise I think we're missing out on ideas and solutions and insights and so much richness. So it is important. It's not just kind of patronizing, a pat on the head, like, oh, let's let the quiet people have a go. You know, if we want the best from society, in businesses, in politics, everywhere, I think it's really important that we try to be brave and speak up and realise that what we have to say is important.
I think what we have to say is important, but also that listening is equally important. And very often the shy people are doing more of the listening. But I was reading something about kind of communication, and she was saying the most important thing we do as humans is communicate. And actually the majority of communication is listening to what the other person is saying. And actually there's an argument that shy people are better at listening because they're just not that obsessed about getting their voice out. And so maybe they are better positioned to be in positions of power because they're better at listening. And that's the kind of crucial part of the communicating. It's not shouting.
For sure. I mean, I think there's no doubt about that really in my mind.
One of the things I'd love to talk about is that sort of being self-conscious, because I think there is a real kind of shy people often feel extremely self-conscious. And a lot of people, especially sort of hormonal, you know, around sort of adolescence, become very self-conscious. And one thing that really helped me, and I've talked about with my son, is this idea that you are so much more conscious of yourself than anyone else. You know, it's a bit like, you know, you've got a big spot on your cheek and you look in the mirror and that is all you see. And you go out thinking, people are just going to look at me from across the street going, oh my God, what a ginormous spot she has on her cheek. And that's all they can think about. Whereas in reality, no one even notices it because they're looking at your eyes and they're listening to what you're talking about. And this idea that you're not that conspicuous, you're not actually that as interesting as you think. When you walk into the room, not everyone's, you know, stands and looks at you. They sort of probably don't notice you coming in. And that is actually quite reassuring, that it's our minds always playing tricks on us, that everyone is judging us, that everyone notices all our imperfections. And if we make one little slip of the tongue, or we say something silly, I even get it now, people, I think, oh my God, no one's going to forget it, what, that silly thing that I said. Whereas actually everyone else has sort of moved on, because we, of course, are the centre of our world, but we're not the centre of everyone else's world.
Yes, exactly. And I think self-consciousness is completely linked to shyness. But the way I think about it is, if we're there worrying about the way we sound, the way we look, the way we move, the what we're wearing, like every aspect of ourselves, the chances are half the population are shy too, so they're feeling pretty much exactly the same. So if they're feeling the same as us, they're worrying about themselves, not us. And then the other half of the population are too busy kind of getting on with doing what they're doing to even give us a second thought. So, yeah, it's understanding that we are really not as important to everybody else as we are to ourselves. And I think it's quite freeing, actually, when you realise. And also, when people do react, and maybe they say something, or they do something which we find kind of upsetting, shy people, we tend to catastrophize and hold on to that and feel like, you know, we were snubbed, or we're very offended because someone didn't react to us the way we wanted them to, or they said something which we found to be rude or, you know, too direct. And in a similar vein, I think it can really help us to realise that people have stuff going on in their lives, and the way they talk and the things they say is often a reflection of the stuff they have going on with themselves and their lives.
Yeah, and I think often talking to a friend about that can, you know, you can see it from sort of a distance and go, well, you know, it's probably that they have had a terrible day and you don't know what's going on in their relationship or their whatever it is. And
yeah,
well, you talked about kind of the difficulties you had growing up as a shy child in presumably the sort of 90s and the noughties. This is obviously before social media. Mm-hmm. Do you think social media and our prolific use of it has made the world a harder place for shy people to navigate?
So I think there's aspects of online which are useful for us. So in some ways it's easier to find your tribe. You can, you know, there's communities and forums and clubs for every kind of random interest, which I think is brilliant. So we're not alone. However, social media, it is an extrovert's paradise. It really is. And the notion of sharing every aspect of yourself, of being on camera, of being visible, of showing up constantly, is, I want to say this nicely, it's repellent to us. It is really difficult and it's hard to understand. And I would say it's almost triggering, because we see other people constantly showing up and being gregarious and confident and prancing around, and we feel like we are not good enough. It's not made for us. We can't do it. And I think for so many reasons, we'll look back on this period of time and see the way that our kids' minds are being shaped by this stuff. And, you know, in 50 years, I wonder where we'll be with it.
Well, it's essentially expanding that notion that outgoing people are the happiest, because you're essentially, you know, creating this kind of scoring system. So the more gregarious and outrageous, and the more time you spend being gregarious and outrageous, the more likes you get, the more followers you get. And then, you know, people are like, well, they're doing really, really well at life. So it's essentially almost kind of making worse this notion that outgoing people are sort of life success stories.
Yeah, but there's another side to it too. So there's a kind of two polar opposites. So you've got the kind of people prancing around being happy and marvellous. And we look at that and we think, oh gosh, you know, I can't possibly be like that. I haven't got enough friends. I haven't got enough likes. I'm not this. I'm not skinny enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not happy enough. I'm not beautiful enough. All those things. And we know about that. But we have this other side where there's extremes around it and there's not so much in the middle. And when you are surrounding yourself by one thing, so when you start going down a rabbit hole, perhaps of social anxiety, for example, when you're, you know, a shy kid, but you don't need medicating, you just need some things to help you handle how you're feeling, some tactics and some tools and a bit of support. If you go down the rabbit hole of something which is essentially a mental illness, and you're looking at those images and watching those videos, you see more and more of it on Instagram and TikTok, and more and more and more. And that doesn't help either. It just becomes worse. So when you perhaps believe that you are sick, whereas maybe you're not sick, maybe you are a shy person.
Yeah, along with 50% of the rest of the population.
Yeah, so I feel like it's actually dangerous in that respect, and it worries me quite a lot. And I even find, you know, when I spend too much time on there myself, getting drawn into these things and thinking on the one hand, oh my goodness, I'm suffering. I'm not suffering with social anxiety, I'm shy. And some stuff's difficult for me, but other stuff I'm brilliant at. But then I'm also comparing myself constantly to people who are nothing like me and beating myself up because I feel like I failed at life because I'm not like them.
If you have a shy child, do you think it's better for them to be in a school or a class, a sort of year group with fewer children so that it's less intimidating? Or is it better to be in a cohort of, you know, a larger cohort of children so that they're more likely to find people they can really connect with who might be a bit more unusual?
I think it depends on the school, because I know some schools where there's large classes, but it's actually a really positive environment. There's lots of support. There's a lovely mixture of kids. Everyone's very understanding. I also know schools with small classes where it's very high pressure, everyone's a very certain type of person. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily about the size of the class, and we don't all have that choice. However, my gut feel is that quieter classes with a bit more teacher focus would be a good thing, if that's an option. But check the school, because putting someone who's shy into a very highly pressured environment with a huge emphasis on competition perhaps wouldn't, you know, necessarily be a good thing. And if there is a lack of neurodiversity in any class, I think that's going to be challenging.
Well, Nadia, it's been so great to chat to you. It's really, really interesting to think about shyness as this sort of neurodiverse condition, as opposed to a kind of downside to a, you know, negative personality trait. And I think, you know, it's great what you're doing, because essentially you're helping shy people, but you're also helping other people support shy people. And as someone who is, you know, I used to be quite shy, but I'm definitely not now, but I'd love to be able to support people that are. I really genuinely would. So it's just, it's really, really great to chat to you, and I really respect the work you're doing with children.
Oh, thank you so much. And yeah, I exactly, you've summed it up. It's not just a conversation to have with shy people, it's something that we all need to understand a bit more so that we can help each other. And that's what life is about in the end.
Absolutely. Well, Nadia has published two books about living with shyness, Shy and Mighty, Your Shyness is a Superpower, and Shy and Mighty, How to Step Out of the Shadows and Live a Bigger Life. Now, one of them is aimed at children and the other is adults. Which is which, Nadia?
So the one with lots of pictures, that's for kids, primary school age. And then the other one hasn't got any pictures, and that's for kind of slightly older children, I would say teenage plus, really into adults.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. And thank you all for downloading this episode of The Parenthood. You can subscribe, rate and review wherever you found this podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram. I'm at marina.fogel. But in the meantime, from Nadia and me, thanks for listening.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.